Good afternoon, everyone. We're just going to wait a couple of more minutes to let people come through, and then we'll get started. Thanks for your patience. Okay, we'll get going. Thank you. So it's quite exciting for me that we're actually launching a new initiative from Times Higher Education and the United Nations Environment Programme, a new, what we're calling the Green Learning and Skills Accelerator. I think I have some slides here, if you can pull my slides up. Thank you. So yes, this is it. It's officially live now. It's a new resources platform, really to share best practice and resources on the green skills revolution. How do we actually drive the global transition to a net zero and a nature positive future? How do we empower higher education and further education institutions to actually get better at giving young people and giving students as well, including adults and lifelong learners, the skills they need for a green future, a green economy? And I think we've identified some challenges and some gaps. So this is really the beginning of what we hope is a global community of best practice sharing, of resources sharing. So we're absolutely thrilled we've been collaborating with UNEP, and we've also been working closely with SOS to make sure the student voice is very prominent on this platform. So there it is. There'll be a bit of a call to action later on to get your engagement, you know, sharing content, building national and regional hubs. But just to sort of run briefly through some research we did. So my colleague Tim Savula has actually commissioned a survey. And then after that, we'll hear from a fantastic panel of experts around how they are tackling the challenges. I'm going to crane my neck over because I haven't got a monitor, but basically we went for a quick survey of actual participants in the Global Sustainable Development Congress last year. So it's a community of mainly educators, but educators who of course demonstrated their commitment to the sustainability agenda. And I think it was just very interesting to look at the general attitudes to the situation. So basically, does your institution have an ambition to take a public role in expanding green learning and skills? A whopping majority, 75%, are saying yes. I'm going to stand up. It's much easier. Do you agree that your institution considers the skills and learning of its students as part of its environmental impact? 49% agree, but you can see it's overwhelming in the broad agreement there. Of course, you'd expect that to be the case. Does your institution use the terms green learning and skills, green skills, in the context of talking about its educational offer to prospective students? You can see only half have said yes to that. So actually even the finding a common language to understand what we mean by green skills, the term itself, I think there's some real challenges around defining what these skills actually are, what the sector really wants from students in terms of industry skills gaps. Does your institution use the term green jobs? So in the context of talking about employment opportunities, quite an interesting, significant number saying no. So it's not really in part of the offer, part of the communication with students around their employment outcomes. In your view, how high a priority is it for your institution to integrate green learning and skills into the existing curriculum? Now, this is an interesting element where we see some discrepancy. So 63% saying it's a high priority. So I think that's a good majority, being very clear that we need to integrate thinking about future green skills requirements into the curricula, but actually a significant number aren't doing much about it in terms of actually auditing content, understanding the content that's out there. So actually 52% not yet in terms of auditing the green learning and skills offer in the curricula. Only 22%, just over a fifth, are actually doing that. So high desire to do it, a high understanding that it's there, but a limitation around the languages used and the understanding used, but also not much action in terms of really getting to grips with what needs to change in the curricula, what the curricula is delivering in this agenda. And then obviously in terms of prioritization, high priority for your institution to involve learners in the development of curricula. So really, really crucial that we have the student voice involved. And just in terms of barriers, and I think this session will really focus a bit on the barriers, and then we'll talk about how we can sort of collaborate for solutions. But the barriers, three most significant barriers to integrating green learning and skills into the existing curricula. I guess academic freedom plays a large part there in terms of academics not necessarily wanting a top-down approach to the curricula. But you can see there a lack of training for teachers in green skills and learning is the highest. Got 39% there, a lack of agreed definition of green learning and skills. I think that's a really important part of this agenda. 38% there, lack of incentives to integrate green learning and skills. So quite a lot of barriers. But I think we'll all agree in this room that it's a really important priority that we're actually educating our students for a sustainable future. So I'm going to pause there, really, and turn to our fantastic panel. I'm very conscious their names are up there, but I haven't introduced them. So what I might do is ask them to briefly introduce themselves. But really, to start just by asking each of you the same question. And that really is just about know what your sense is. What are your sense of the obstacles from your different perspectives? We've got a representative of UNEP, we've got a representative of the student community, and a university leader. But why don't I start with you? I'll go to the far side, Julian, to ask you about your perspective from an institutional leadership perspective around how are you managing this issue.
Thanks, Phil. Really good to be here at this exciting launch of this important initiative. From my perspective working in a university, I think, of course, we'd say this in universities, concepts, how we define things are really important. So the concept of green skills, just that concept, I think, is really important. I mean, what are the underpinning academic literatures around this? Probably the closest and more established concept is ESD, Education for Sustainable Development. And what ESD would say is, of course, there's knowledge and abilities, which are important in terms of the green skills, but also it's about values and attitudes as well of all students. And I'll come back to that in a moment, but three quick things, Phil, if I may then. First of all, where's the demand for green skills coming from, I think is really important. So national governments are important. Interestingly, in a Manchester context, and I know this applies to many cities around the world, the real impetus behind green skills is coming from regional government and regional drivers. Often mayors have more ambitious climate change targets than national governments do. So in our case in Manchester, our mayor wants to be net zero by 2038. The UK government hasn't committed to that until 2050. So our mayor is really interested in green skills. You know, how are we going to retrofit all the homes and get heat pumps into every house in Manchester? So that drive for green skills is coming regionally, I think, as much as nationally. Of course, employers it's coming from. And I think individuals who want to make a difference in the world. So demand for green skills, I think, is important. The supply side, we're sat here today as a group of universities. But it's really important to think, what's the role of schools? I think that's really important in this, and also technical and tertiary providers as well. So green skills cannot be solved by universities. We have a really important role to play as part of an ecosystem. So that's my second point about supply. And the third point, just to say, I think some of these concepts I started with, I think this gets to the heart of the difference between fundamental and applied knowledge. Really important green skills. Some universities will be doing things which might be around fundamental physics and two-dimensional materials, and thinking how that can contribute to more sustainable materials in concrete or new types of energy storage. That's fundamental knowledge versus applied. I think both things are really important. It's not a competition. Research-driven versus teaching-driven approaches. systems thinking versus specific agendas. So we mentioned, let's get electronic heating and heat pumps or cooling in this part of the world. Let's get that into every house. That, I think, is important, but also to think about how things interact as systems. So, for example, if you're the cooling we're experiencing in this building, this has impact on health. So you have to understand SDG 3 and good health and well-being and respiratory diseases, and how does our understanding of health and medicine interrelate with environments? You cannot look at green skills alone. Part of green skills is systems thinking. And just finally, to come back to this point, I think it's absolutely fundamental, Phil, in this debate is around the difference between knowledge and attitudes and values, and both things have a place. And as a university system and our learners, whatever we're teaching, even if you're teaching somebody to be a dentist, you might think, well, where do green skills come into this? They absolutely do. You know, a dentist is going to have to think about not just the types of chemicals they might use, for example, how they have an impact on the environment and the drugs administered, but also a dentist is a voter, is a leader, is a health leader, is a practitioner, is a decision maker. And universities, if we keep this debate too narrow about green skills being something technical, we miss the bigger role, I think, of universities, which is to educate tomorrow's citizens and leaders, whatever job they go into, because every job requires people to be citizens of this world where green skills become important. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I might just ask you to just reflect a tiny bit more on that really important point about it's not just some technical skills, like you're going to work in engineering and you need to work out how to engineer something that's going to be more sustainable. That broader mindset, but how does that work in terms of a university implementing that? Because obviously, I guess a lot of universities don't really welcome too much top-down management of individual courses, for example. How do you tackle that in terms of encouraging individual lecturers to integrate that thinking into their courses?
I think there's a variety of strategies we've got in HE. You can do things obviously within and outside of the curriculum. Within the curriculum, we can use our graduate attributes, and they can be more top-down, if you like, where you know university policy can contribute to more holistic thinking on the sorts of values and attitudes that students need to develop to operate, not just in a world that requires green skills, but requires critical thinking, requires freedom of thought, requires understanding of issues of equity and social justice. So I think this is part of a broader trend. Universities need to get much better at this. So you can do that through graduate attributes. You can do things outside of the specific degree programs as well, Phil. I think we, for example, at Manchester, we have an interdisciplinary college where students can elect to take programs regardless of what they study. And many of the things in our interdisciplinary college are very much about addressing those really big topics. So you could have a physicist and a philosopher coming together to think about the role of ethics in AI, and they can do a program on this. And I think that's really... So universities can use their kind of cross-curricular initiatives, and then I think those extracurricular initiatives as well. We have a whole range of those at Manchester. We have an award for students doing these things, and they can develop some of those attitudes as well. And that might involve people volunteering in communities, and in this case, it could involve doing environmental forms of volunteering. But I think looking at the curriculum itself inside and how that relates to programs is where we really need to take this agenda.
Thank you. And I guess that broader raison d'etre of universities and having people think about curiosity and critical thinking and questioning received wisdom is healthy in terms of that sustainable mindset as well. So we confront climate denialism and all that sort of thing.
And that's where the systems thinking comes in, I think, Phil, as well. The ability, you cannot think about the future planetary needs without understanding how fairness impacts on sustainability, how good health impacts on sustainability, how innovation impacts on sustainability, how peace and justice impacts on sustainability. So the ability to look at these, you know, particularly through the 17 SDGs, they're not silos. These things all interrelate. And I think the more that we can get students of all disciplines to understand that, yes, you know, you might be doing a degree in medicinal biochemistry, but actually you're a university student, you're a graduate, you're a citizen of the world, you need to think in systems, you need to use values. That for me is absolutely critical, and it goes beyond, you know, it's not a narrow topic, green skills, but it could be if we if we're not careful, be conceived as a narrow topic. What I think our job in universities to do is to make this as broad as possible, the way we think about green skills.
Excellent. And I should just mention to the audience, obviously you heard that Manchester was number two in the world overall for the impact rankings, but I think maybe it's not uniquely to that group, but actually Manchester submitted to every one of the 17 SDGs. So it's not just finding a niche, it's actually an incredibly broad approach. But in the interest of time, we need to move on. But thank you so much, Julian, for that. Mana, we need a student perspective here. How are students demanding their universities deliver, and is that a movement that you're having an effect with? Can you persuade your universities to do more, and what are the barriers as you see them?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Actually, funny enough, I've already graduated, so I'm no longer a student. I used to be a student recently. But so I have two hats today. I am one representing SOS International as their champion, and also Switch because I have my own MPO working on climate education. So to introduce everyone about the SOS side, we're actually working with UNEP and the THE team to come up with what is the definition of green jobs and green skilling. So some of you may have joined us yesterday in our Asia workshop to really define what that means and how can we use it further on. We're trying to really define these two terms in order to work on the big green three E's, which is one, green employment and entrepreneurship. So how do we increase the number of jobs available that are in the green industry? Secondly, green education and the skills, the current operations, how is it not green? How can we change it into a green? And third, green empowerment and youth engagement. So these are our three green E's that we're focusing on as SOS, and we're putting together a Green Jobs Youth Pact right now, which will be published in July next month at the UN's high-level conference in New York. And why we're talking about this is to develop 1 million new green jobs, transform 1 million existing roles into green roles, and thirdly, to support 10,000 young green entrepreneurs in starting their own businesses. But unless we have a clear definition of what the youth need to really learn and skill up, we aren't able to start that dialogue. So that is why we're working on this workshop. So that's kind of the gist of what we're doing at SOS. But as a younger person within this community, we believe that whilst we really do want to work on the green sector to thrive, there is less pressure to actually do so from private sectors and other institutions to choose that as a career. And a lot of times I have fellow students, and also I talk with a lot of schools and universities in the private sector, but many of them say that still working on the climate is secondary to them. And also they themselves don't really understand what it means to be in the green industry because they say, oh, it's environmentally friendly. And that's about it. So really defining those key gaps in understanding what being green means is very important in this timeline. Secondly, we believe that all jobs actually need to be green, not specifically only in the green sector. And I think this is a very big gap we see within the private industries as well, because if when I have talks with the private sector, most of them have environment departments or CSR departments or SDGs departments. But in reality, that shouldn't be the case. That doesn't need to exist. We just need to implement it in each existing departments. So how do we create that dialogue between the academic sector and the private so that they understand how to pressure the incoming students to be more climate literate prior to joining the workforce? And so I feel like that is a narrative that perhaps THE and UNEP and SOS can start to engage more of the private sector to work in collaboration as well.
Thank you very much. I have to apologize. I was getting a phone call from an African radio station who was trying to interview me 10 minutes too early, and the warning sign. So I'm sorry I got a bit distracted there. But thank you very much for sharing that. And I think, yeah, it's important to say you're representing the student voice through SOS. But do you want to tell us a little bit more specifically about Switch Association as well?
Yeah, sure. So for Switch, we actually worked with UNEP on G4Y to be translated into Japanese, and we've created online toolkits for teachers to utilize in Japanese, because we realized that there is a very significant barrier in language. So a lot of the sustainability-related curriculums are in English, but for example, in Japan, we don't have access to those curriculums, because in reality, our children are taught English from elementary school, but they don't necessarily use it in their everyday lives, and neither do their parents. And so it's not a necessity for them to research in English. So we already have a cut in understanding or accessing these information. So we've created our whole new curriculum with teachers locally, and now we're working with the private sector to create more practical skills within Japan that is applicable, because even in Asia, we have very different societal, economic norms and environmental problems. They're not all the same. So making sure that the context is applicable to each region is very important, and making sure that this curriculum is more action-oriented, because we have probably a little too much online toolkits that are available. But in reality, people just read it, but it doesn't mean that they make it theirs and use it as a form of practical skill sets. So how do we make it more practical is something that we've already started doing ourselves.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And Youngwan, this is good. We get three different perspectives, but let's hear from you in terms of the UNEP perspective here. What do you think the key barriers are, and how can we collectively work to you know, narrow those gaps and break down those barriers?
Yes, thank you for the question. And I think the previous speakers have already mentioned the important obstacles, so maybe I can just add. I can start by mentioning that there is a global green skills gap. So according to LinkedIn, between 2022 and 2023, the share of green talent in the workforce increased by 12% in 48 countries, whereas the share of job postings requiring at least one green skill grew at 22%. So globally, the demand for green skills is twice as much than the supply. And to provide this, to close this green skills gap, of course, the role of education institutions are very important. But it's not just the education institutions that have to, you know, build the green skills. It's actually a whole of society approach that we need to build these green skills, because to build these green skills, we have to work across all the governments, across all the sectors with different stakeholder groups, including the government, civil society, private sector, and the youth. So as previous speaker already mentioned, UNEP has been working in this space to expand the multi-stakeholder engagement dialogue to close this gap and to promote this collaboration. So under the Green Jobs for Youth Pact, we have been working together with governments, private sector, employers, workers associations, academia, and youth themselves. And we have been doing this regional level, multi-stakeholder engagement at the regional level as well as national level in Thailand, China, Kenya, and many other countries. We have also been doing a national level assessment to find where the green skills gaps are. So this lack of, you know, collective understanding, closing the gap, you know, having more conversations to close the gap, narrow the gaps in differences of interest, visions, and priorities between different stakeholders is one area where UNEP is working on.
Thank you very much. So we've kind of reached the end of our time, but I'm keeping you away from your lunch. But does anyone have any comments or thoughts from your perspective? And really, what I'd probably just put the slide up at the end there around the QR code, because I think there is a sort of a case now of really a call to action. We want people to register their interest in this platform. I think we want to create a community of specialists. We want to share good practice. We want to create regional hubs and national hubs with industry and universities partnering. So we want to create networks. And the key really is just to make sure that all the best practice that work to actually properly define green skills, but to define them in a regional context, because I think they'll vary in terms of different economies and different countries, but also to get all the right voices in the room and make sure that the resources are shared and best practices are shared. So there's a register your interest button on the site. There's some preliminary content, some mission statement material, but the key thing for me is the register your interest. We want to start building a community and getting a bit of a network going and really supporting this agenda. Do either of you want to make, or any of you want to make any final comments? Otherwise, I might. I'm sorry it's been so quick, but we might have to wrap up and let people have their lunch. Any final remarks?
Everyone's so nice. The mic's coming from two sides. Thank you. I think the last comment I would definitely want to talk about is the fact that we really need to increase the dialogue of, well, what are we putting the goal towards? Because I think it's really easy to say, okay, let's teach the students about the climate and the environment and SDGs, but we already have the set goal. For example, we need to meet the Paris Agreement. And what are the skills that are not being met right now? And beyond the Paris Agreement, if that does achieve, what are the skills that we need? And based on those impacts, what is the skill set that need to be provided on the accelerator program? Because I think it's really easy to talk about, okay, let's just provide about the current environmental friendly curriculums that we have. But we need to go beyond that, because right now, for example, if everyone all around the world live like a normal Thai citizen, it's said to cost about 1.5 worths of Earth. But we only have one Earth. So we really need to discuss, how do we meet that goal with a full capacity? And does everyone understand that that is a goal? Because I think we forget about the fact that we're using so much resources. So making sure that that narrative is at the very forefront, then creating that community should be very easy, because everyone will say, of course, we need to live within one Earth system. How do we do that? So making sure that people realize that we're using a little too much, but we have a chance to change right now.
Thanks. And Julian, please jump in.
Just one really quick comment, just to take a historical perspective on this then, because this is the challenge of our times. I'm really conscious we're in our 200th year at the moment as a university, and we were founded in 1824, and we're celebrating looking back, but also looking forward. And it just makes me think, we were established as a university to train mechanics and to train doctors. So there were medical skills and engineering skills needed in society. In 19th century, we were the first city in the world to have an industrial revolution, and we were born as a university to meet those needs of society. And this is exactly the same debate today. We have the Paris Agreement. There's no bigger KPI in the world than the 1.5 degree KPI. That's the most important challenge. But universities are really good at this, and we should have a lot of confidence that we've established ourselves in our different local, national, historical contexts. Often universities have been developed precisely to meet those needs of society, and not just to do that in a, let's just understand how to treat the sick. Also, if you think, how do you treat the sick? Well, you need to do research, you need the values, you need compassion, you need to think about future issues, you need to think about the role of society and how that connects to health. So I think we're quite good at this in higher education, so we do need impetus and we need initiatives like this, but let's have the confidence that we've always been around as a sector to respond to the needs of society, and to do that not in a mechanistic way, but in that critical systems thinking way that uses values and looks at how knowledge interrelates across the different disciplines. And that, so just to leave on an optimistic note about this, we're really good at this in higher education, so let's take on that 1.5 degree challenge. We can do it. We've implemented vaccines, we've done research, we've produced cures for cancer, we've developed artificial intelligence. We're the smart guys in university and the smart girls in universities. This is what we do. So let's get really excited about this, and I'm sure universities can play a really critical role in this.
Brilliant. I love that note of optimism to end, and we have run out of time, but it's lunchtime, so I hope you enjoy a bit of a break. Please do get involved. We want a community. We want to build a community. But thank you so much to the panel for sharing those important insights. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that panel. Phil does have to run off to an interview, so please do let him escape, and you can perhaps catch up with him over lunchtime. And please do come back at 2 p.m. for our next session if you've reserved a seat. And if you haven't, then we'll try our best to get you in. Thank you very much.